This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Robert Smith in Washington, D.C. Neil Conan is away. Elliot Spitzer resigns in the wake of a sex scandal. Geraldine Ferraro is the latest in the hot seat for her comments about Barack Obama. Florida and Michigan, still up in the air. And oh yeah, there was a primary yesterday in Mississippi. It's Wednesday. Must be time for another hit of the Political Junkie.
There you go again.
My name is Geraldine Ferraro.
When I hear your new ideas, I'm reminded of that ad. Where's the beef?
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
I'm John Kerry, and I'm reporting for duty.
But I'm the decider.
Every Wednesday, NPR's political editor Ken Rudin joins us for the latest on the presidential race and other political news. It's going to be 6 long weeks before the next primary in Pennsylvania, but we've got plenty to chew on till then. We have the political upheaval in New York State after Elliot Spitzer's announcement today that he would step down from the governor's office. Barack Obama won the Mississippi primary yesterday, increasing his delegate lead over Hillary Clinton. Former Democratic vice presidential candidate Geraldine Ferraro defended her comment that Barack Obama wouldn't be in the Democratic frontrunner if he were not black. In a few minutes, we'll talk with former presidential campaign manager Susan Estrich about how to deal with the fallout when candidate surrogates create controversy. And we want to hear what you think. Do you judge candidates by the company they keep? How important is that to you? Our phone number is 800-989-8255. The email address is talk@npr.org. And you can also join the conversation on our trusty blog, npr.org/blogofthenation. Later in the program, we'll talk to the master of horror, Stephen King, joins us. But first, the master of politics. NPR political editor Ken Rudin is with us in Studio 3A. Hello. How's it going, Ken?
Hi, Robert. Quiet day today.
Yeah, not much politics to talk about, really. So maybe we should go to a trivia question first. What do you think?
Well, we have at least, I could give you 2 trivia questions, but here's an easy one. The last governor of New York to resign,
not counting what's happened in the last 2 hours.
Not including Elliot Spitzer. And the other one, because yesterday was the Mississippi primary, the last Mississippi Republican to lose a Senate race in Mississippi.
The last Mississippi Republican to lose a Senate race there. If you know the answer or think you know the answer, give it a shot. Call us at 800-989-8255 or send an email to talk@npr.org. Ken, let's start with the Spitzer resignation. Here's what he said in a news conference just a couple of hours ago.
Over the course of my public life, I have insisted, I believe correctly, that people, regardless of their position or power, take responsibility for their conduct. I can and will ask no less of myself. For this reason, I am resigning from the office of governor. At Lieutenant Governor Patterson's request, the resignation will be effective Monday, March 17, a date that he believes will permit an orderly transition.
It's hard to believe, but this has happened enough that we've become connoisseurs of this kind of resignation speech. How did you feel about this one? How did it rank?
It's breathtaking, only because of how quickly it happened. This is 48 hours after the story broke. New York Times announced this Elliot Spitzer's involvement in a prostitution ring on its website 2 days ago, and then he's gone. I mean, some people thought that he would just stick it out, as Bill Clinton did, or David Vitter did, for that matter, in Louisiana. But I think the fact is, and it has been said over and over again, that Elliot Spitzer was not the most liked person in Albany. He had a career of, putting people in jail, including people involved in prostitution rings, and the word hypocrisy, not so much the sex part, but the hypocrisy part, is really what I think did him in.
Yeah, when you think about it, you don't really think of a politician putting all their eggs in one basket until you see that egg broken. And we realize now, of course, that his integrity was really everything to him and everything to the voters. That's why he was there. That's why he was elected. And once that was taken away from him,
exactly. There's nothing left. And we saw that, the 2 times he was elected state attorney general, again, was the Mr. Clean, the Elliot Ness image he had of just ending corruption, ending politics and business as usual in New York.
Is there any impact on the national race on Hillary Clinton for those of us who are not following New York politics closely?
Well, I mean, the only way it hurts Hillary Clinton's campaign is not so much that this scandal involves her or it spread to her, but he is a superdelegate. He is a committed Hillary Clinton superdelegate, and of course every delegate matters right now. As of this point, it looks like that Barack Obama has a 112 delegate lead over Hillary Clinton. That includes the superdelegates as well. And David Paterson, who is also committed to Hillary Clinton, who will be the next governor of New York, is already a superdelegate. So ultimately what this means is that at least on the presidential scale, it's one less delegate for Hillary Clinton.
You talked about how quickly this happened, and so that means for Lieutenant Governor David Paterson, who will take office on Monday, on St. Patrick's Day. And this means someone who we have to assume never thought he was going to be governor, has no executive experience. He was a state senator for 20 years or so, will now lead one of the largest states in the nation. What do we know about David Paterson?
Well, we know he's African-American. It would be only the third black governor in the country since Reconstruction. And I keep getting a lot of emails. What do you mean since Reconstruction? There was a black governor who, actually a lieutenant governor in Mississippi in the 1870s, PBS Pinchback, as everybody remembers that name, became governor. But in the modern era, it was obviously Doug Wilder in Virginia, Deval Patrick, who's currently serving in Massachusetts, and now David Paterson, so that would be only a third. He's also legally blind, which would be pretty remarkable. And you talk to the Republicans in New York, especially Joe Bruno, the state Senate majority leader, a bitter foe of Elliot Spitzer, says that he gets along very well with David Paterson, and they have a very good working relationship.
We have an email from Amy in Tulsa, and she's asking if we knew that whether Mr. Spitzer had larger political aspirations. I would have to ask, was it clear that he might run for president someday? And what does one do after something like this? Where will he go?
Well, as far as governors of New York running for president, I mean, we saw Nelson Rockefeller try at least three times. We saw Mario Cuomo hint about it. Malcolm Wilson, of course, never ran for president. But obviously, when you're governor of New York, you do seem to think of yourself as perhaps bigger than life. And Elliot Spitzer, in many ways, was bigger than life. When he was elected in 2006, he got 69% of the vote, the largest percentage anybody ever got running for governor of New York. But what you do now, I mean, look, Jim McGreevy, the disgraced former governor of New Jersey, is now, I believe, in a monastery. Well, he's a priest.
Not a monastery. I think he's training in a religious school. So,
and John Rowland, the former governor of Connecticut, the Republican governor of Connecticut, who resigned in a scandal, is now doing some consulting work in his, I think, that where he grew up in Waterbury. So there is a second life of this, but it's a tremendous come down for Elliot Spitzer, because whatever you thought about him, he was a very smart guy and somebody who was planning for this moment, not this moment, but election as governor of New York for the longest time.
There is always the book contract. That is one thing we have seen.
Or a Talk of the Nation host.
Talk of the Nation host, yes. After falling far, that's where you can go. One more question. I live in New York, and I've lived there 4 years now. And in the last 4 years, I have seen the resignation of the governors of New Jersey, Connecticut, and New York State now. Is it something in the water?
No, I don't think so. I mean, they're all different things. But the one person you did not suspect would ever fall to a personal scandal like this was Elliot Spitzer.
Absolutely. It was one of those ones where there had been suspicions in terms of John Rowland, the governor of Connecticut, and James McGreevy, the governor of New Jersey. Political reporters later said, we knew, we heard things, we saw it coming. In this case, I can't find a single political reporter who saw anything like this coming.
And it happened within 48 hours, which the speed of that is also just so remarkable.
We're going to have some people who have suggestions for answers to the trivia questions, and we're going to get to them in just a minute. But I wanted to go to yesterday's primary. We used to hang on each and every turn in the primary process. This one was significant, of course, to Barack Obama, but it's starting to feel in the race that none of these are making a difference anymore.
Well, if you look at the number of delegates, and perhaps, I mean, it does make some difference that Barack Obama netted four or five delegates out of it. He got 61% of the vote in Mississippi. What I thought was more troubling was the racial breakdown in the state. Barack Obama got 90% of the black vote and perhaps 25% of the white vote. So obviously the racial split in Mississippi, at least, was pretty stark. And the last thing the Democratic Party needs now is a split on racial, racial division like that. So that was a little uncomfortable. But again, if he won four more, if he won four more delegates, four or five more delegates in Mississippi, well, that's more than Hillary Clinton got for her big win in Ohio. So it sounds like even though Mississippi is not nearly the amount of votes or delegates as Ohio, but ultimately in a state when you're trying to reach the magic number 2025, every vote in every primary counts.
Absolutely. About the that racial breakdown, we know after South Carolina that, of course, he had Barack Obama had received the majority of the African-American votes. It was in the 60-70% range. Is that right? Once you get up to 92%, or to look at it the other way, Hillary Clinton getting 8% of African-American voters, that's almost unheard of. I mean, that is as low as some Republican candidates have gotten in the general election.
Yeah, but, you know, we also saw that in many of the caucuses in the states of Idaho, Nebraska, Kansas, states that obviously are not, there's no significant African-American population, Barack Obama was doing extremely well with the white vote. It seems like in the latter part of this campaign, certainly we saw this in Texas and Ohio, that Hillary Clinton has regained some of that white vote, or I should say a big portion of that white vote. And obviously she's looking to a victory on April 22nd in Pennsylvania to continue that. But there seems to be more of a racial split than there had been earlier in the campaign.
What does the next 6 weeks look like? Is it all Pennsylvania all the time?
Well, no, not really. I mean, of course, Hillary Clinton is leading in the polls there, and we've been wrong so many times, but she could very well win it. Barack Obama says don't ignore what happens 2 weeks later in Indiana and North Carolina, where Barack Obama could do very well. But it could get ugly, because the longer you focus on one state, and the tension is obviously mounting. Barack Obama would love to make the case that he has the math on his side. He certainly has the delegates on his side. He's won the most primaries. But you can make the case that Hillary Clinton has momentum on her side, winning those two big states, Texas and Ohio, on March 4th. And then, of course, you know, if she wins in Pennsylvania, that continues that momentum.
And just to quickly do the math, it's Obama has won as many extra delegates in Mississippi and Wyoming as Hillary Clinton did in Ohio and Texas.
That is correct.
It evens out. Back to where we started. It's Political Junkie Day here at Talk of the Nation. When we come back, more on Geraldine Ferraro and Samantha Power. How much do candidates' friends and supporters influence what you think about the candidates? And we will have answers to our trivia questions. We're taking your calls at 800-989-8255. I'm Robert Smith. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Robert Smith in Washington, sitting in for Neil Conan. We're getting our weekly dose of political junkie this hour, and we're talking about the company they keep, the presidential candidates. When a surrogate or an advisor says something controversial, what do you do? We're keeping company with NPR's political editor, Ken Rudin. Judge as you will, and we're taking your calls. Do you judge candidates by the company they keep? How important is that to you? Give us a call at 800-989-8255. Our email address is talk@npr.org. You can also read what other listeners have to say at our blog, npr.org/blogofthenation. We're here with Ken Rudin, the political junkie, with our trivia questions. Remind us of the first question about New York State.
Well, Eliot Spitzer having resigned as governor today, who was the last governor of New York to resign his office?
Well, we have an email from Sue in Nashville. She asks, was it FDR to assume the presidency?
FDR did leave the governorship, but of course his term was up in 1932. The answer is not FDR, although he was named after that highway in New York, that FDR Drive. Very few people know that.
Remarkable coincidence. Let's go to Mark. Mark joins us from Chicago. You have an answer to the question about the New York governor?
Yes, it was Nelson Rockefeller. I lived in New York in those days. I think it was in the early 70s, 72, 73. It wasn't a scandal, though. I think he left for some personal reason. He was heading some financial organization or something like that. But it was Nelson Rockefeller.
That is a correct answer. He resigned in December of 1973 to head this it was called like the Commission on Critical Ideas, but a lot of people thought the real reason he was resigning was to plan a 1976 bid for the presidency.
Right.
Lieutenant Governor Malcolm Wilson took over, but within a year, Gerald Ford, the new president, named Nelson Rockefeller his vice president.
Of course, he had something of a sex scandal later in his life.
He did. As a matter of fact, that was the end of his life.
Yes, he was.
When Nelson Rockefeller died of a heart attack in 1979, he was apparently with another woman, and in his penthouse apartment, and it was not the greatest ending for Nelson Rockefeller, no.
Thank you very much, Mark, and congratulations for getting the answer. And remind us of your second trivia question here.
Well, yesterday was the Mississippi primary. Who was the last Mississippi Republican to lose a Senate race in that state?
I would never have been able to guess, but we have one person, Douglas, who is writing us. Well, it's an email. We don't know where he's writing from, but he says, Haley Barbour, early 80s.
1982. The reason that's interesting because, you know, once upon a time, Mississippi was such a Democratic, deep South Democratic state. But when Haley Barbour lost for the Senate against John Stennis in 1982, no Republican has lost a Senate race since then.
Congratulations, Douglas, and to everyone who wrote in. You get the glory of knowing that your mind can match wits with the political junkie.
Which is very sad.
I wanted to bring this around. We had talked about this a little bit earlier about Geraldine Ferraro's comments in the last couple of days that Barack Obama wouldn't be where he was if he weren't black. And it is, I'm losing count here. It seems like almost a dozen times we've seen in the last couple of months where a supporter or an acquaintance or someone who's actually with a campaign says something, they put their foot in it, and this dance begins, this dance of one side being outraged, calling for repudiation, rejection, that sort of thing. The other side sometimes gives it, sometimes doesn't. What's happening here? I mean, what's the big picture?
Well, I mean, it has been. Look, first of all, and we've said this many times, the fact is the candidates, Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, are very similar on the issues. So it becomes, there's a frustration out there. One, Hillary Clinton has talked about all her experience and everything, and why is somebody who's only been in the Senate 3 years doing as well as he is? Barack Obama supporters are just taking justifiably or unjustifiably slights at what they see as racial or as bigoted remarks by other people, not only the Hillary Clinton people. Steve King, the Republican candidate, the Republican congressman from Iowa, said the other day, who's a big John McCain supporter, said that Al-Qaeda would be dancing in the streets if Barack Obama would win. And of course, you know, John McCain has to respond to that, saying that obviously that doesn't belong in our campaign at all. Samantha Power, the former foreign policy advisor to Barack Obama, called Hillary Clinton a monster, and she resigned from her role as an advisor in the campaign. And, of course, now we have the Hillary Clinton, Geraldine Ferraro comment.
Do we know any time at which this has made a difference in a race where somebody has said something personal about the opponent that ends up blowing back, I guess is the term, on the candidate and hurting them in the polls?
Well, you know, I mean, there are so many different instances. You do remember 1988 when Donna Brazile, who was an aide to Michael Dukakis at the time, she said there was rumors about Vice President George Bush, the first George Bush, rumors that he was having some kind of an extramarital relationship, and Donna Brazile was very frustrated by the media's refusal to talk about this scandal, this story, and so she blasted the media for ignoring it. And of course, ultimately, I think it was George W. Bush who blasted her for, you know, raising this kind of issue, and she was forced to resign from the Dukakis campaign.
Well, we have on the phone from Los Angeles, Susan Estrich. She actually ran Michael Dukakis' presidential campaign in 1988. And as you say, she's dealt with this issue herself. Thanks for joining us, Susan.
My pleasure. I gave Donna 2 weeks severance with 1 week left in the campaign. So I tried to cushion the blow anyway.
Was this inevitable, or was there a lot of discussion within the campaign that she had to go after this?
Well, there was a lot of discussion with one person. That was the candidate, who was the one who said to me she has to go. You know, a lot of this depends on the candidate and the posture he or she has taken. In that case, Michael Dukakis had said, against the advice of many, I should add, that he wanted to run a strong and positive campaign, and he was absolutely adamant that we would not fight at the same level we were being fought with. And so he had made it a rule. There was a lot of talk about George Bush Sr.'s supposed girlfriend, and everyone knew her name. And he said, if I hear that name from anybody on this campaign, they're fired. So when Donna said the name in frustration that no one else would, he called me and said, you've got to fire her. And I said, fire Donna? I love Donna. So I came up with my severance pay plan.
Is there, you know, I'm curious, inside a campaign, we can only ask this of somebody who is not currently running a campaign, because they would never admit
Thank
this
God.
If they were. They would never admit this if they were. But is there sometimes the sense that you kind of like it when your surrogates maybe say something a little bit out there. You sure. distance yourself, you push them away, but you know, when let's say the word monster is thrown out over and over and over and over again on the news, is there a sense that maybe they're doing some of the dirty work for you?
Well, sometimes, but it has to be done skillfully. I mean, certainly you didn't hear George W. Bush last time screaming bloody murder at the people attacking the Vietnam vets and others who were attacking John Kerry. I mean, he was perfectly happy to have them out there attacking and to say, well, I don't know anything about this. But it has to be done skillfully. And it generally is better done by people who have an independent reputation. The problem Obama faced with Samantha Power was that most people, as distinguished an academic as she is, most people only knew of her, and certainly only knew of her quote, because she was identified as an Obama advisor. And that was just a little too close for a guy who was supposed to be running a positive campaign to get to a monster comment.
So for that to work, you have to clearly have them at arm's length or beyond.
Well, for instance, there's a difference between Samantha Power, whose title and whose reason for being interviewed by the Scotsman was her role in the Obama campaign, and Geraldine Ferraro, who, I mean, I happen to love Jerry. I worked for her many years ago, but she's a person in her own right. I mean, she's not getting marching orders from the Hillary Clinton campaign, nor are they responsible, really, for what she says. She says what she thinks. Everybody who knows Jerry knows that. So if she says something about Obama, it's a little bit harder to expect Hillary Clinton to be reining in Jerry Ferraro or asking her to resign from a position she doesn't have.
Well, Ken Rudin, what about this? Geraldine Ferraro has some history here.
Well, I mean, to be fair, in 1988, we just found this out today, we looked it up, and Geraldine Ferraro in 1988 said that if Jesse Jackson wouldn't be running for president had he not been black.
So, right, I remember that.
So that's obviously, but Susan, I have a question to ask you, though, that when Bob Kerry, who endorsed Hillary Clinton several months ago, said that, but I have great respect for Barack Hussein Obama, and then when Billy Sheehan from New Hampshire talks about, you know, Barack Obama's drug past or whatever it was, do you not see that as a concerted effort or some kind of an effort? You think it's just individuals just, you know, speaking out of turn?
Well, I don't know. I don't think Hillary Clinton sat down with Billy Sheehan and said, you know, why don't you go do this? Had he gotten whatever information he had about drug use or whatever it was from somebody inside the campaign? Maybe.
I think they got it from his own Obama's autobiography. Is where
right.
They got it from.
It's not exactly a secret.
Right.
Now, in Billy Sheehan's case, he had some title. He was a national co-chair. So if you have a title, you generally, and you do something very embarrassing, you often have to give up the title. But, for instance, last weekend with John McCain's supporter, the congressman from Iowa, I don't believe he has any, quote, title in the campaign. So all you got from McCain was, gee, I'm going to run my own campaign. I'm going to be positive. But basically, I don't control what members of Congress say.
Let's get some listeners in on the conversation. Mo is calling us from Little Rock, Arkansas. You're on the air, Mo.
Hi, yes. We have now had at least three different Clinton proxies attempt to interject race into this presidential race, and yet we're supposed to believe that these are all accidents and they're off message. I just find that a little hard to believe.
Well, I don't think they're necessarily accidents, and I don't think they're necessarily independent contractors. I mean, you certainly can't say that Bill Clinton is off on his own frolic and detour. It's only a question of how the campaign deals with them and whether they can distance themselves from them or not. You certainly can't distance yourself from Bill Clinton when you're Hillary.
But can't they reject and denounce?
Sure. I mean, you know, we're deeply troubled. We reject and denounce. So what? I mean, that's what McCain did about this guy, the congressman from Iowa. Big
Steve
deal,
King.
Right? And is that going to stop anybody?
Thanks for your call, Mo.
And in fairness, Hillary Clinton did call the comments Geraldine Ferraro's comments regrettable.
Right, exactly.
Let's go to Rachel. Rachel is on the line from Charlottesville, Virginia.
Hi.
Hi, Rachel.
Thanks for having me on. I actually worked with the DNC and worked for President Clinton and was involved in Al Gore's campaign. And, you know, I don't necessarily judge candidates by the company they keep. It's an interesting dynamic in a campaign where sometimes people think that access equals power. And so when they're working on a campaign and have a title, sometimes they get a little too big for their britches, and sometimes they say things that are, you know, very regrettable. But that doesn't stop me from, you know, focusing my attention on the candidate themselves. Now, certainly if, you know, the candidate has just made a terrible decision, it's obviously somebody that has no business, they have no business aligning themselves with, that's obviously going to make me question their ability to judge character and make me start looking at their character. But to a certain extent, you know, you have to separate all the people that work on the campaign, all the people with titles, all the other congressmen and senators that are involved, and really focus in on the candidate. And I also agree with your previous caller that I'm African American and Russian, and it's getting so boring to keep talking about race. When are we going to get over the fact that there are some of us with more of a certain chemical than other people? I'd rather talk about, I live in Charlottesville, and I live
Rachel, we need to go to a quick break. We need to go to a quick break now. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm sorry, continue your thought, Rachel.
I'm sorry?
Continue your thought. Did you have a question you wanted Susan Estes to respond to?
I just really hope that people who are looking at these candidates are really just looking at their character, and I wanted to see what you guys thought about, you know, just campaign workers is a very stressful job, and what they thought about, you know, thought about that, and campaign workers sometimes going off a little bit.
Well, thanks, Rachel. What do you think, Susan Estrich? I mean, does this reflect a climate that is inside every campaign?
Well, I think Rachel's absolutely right. First of all, titles are a dime a dozen in campaigns. I mean, I used to make them up every day and give them to anybody who wanted one. You want to be a national vice co-chair? Okay, it's yours. You know? So titles mean nothing. I think the reality is that, you know, Samantha Power, to take the example of the Obama advisor, is a brilliant young woman and a brilliant professor. But there was a time in life when you could give an interview to the Scotsman and never hear of it again. We just live in a different culture. And the Internet and Matt Drudge and the whole world of instant communications means any mistake anyone says is back in your face in 30 seconds. And I think Rachel is right that you can't really ultimately judge a campaign by what every volunteer and every, you know, person with a title says, but those people do have to be careful.
Let's talk with Rosemarie. Rosemarie joins us from Cincinnati, Ohio.
Hi. I actually do think that you are somewhat, that campaigns are somewhat responsible for what they're, for what the people say that are working for them or with them, but I also understand that you don't have control in, you know, what comes out of somebody's mouth when you're not standing there with them. On the other hand, I do think that how you respond to what people do on your campaign makes a difference. And I'm not trying to compare what one campaign said versus what the other one said. However, I look at what Obama did. He, you know, fired two people so far, or three, whereas what we get is a regrettable comment from Hillary Clinton. And so, you know, and Samantha Power's well, I know you can't compare, but it wasn't about race, whereas Ferraro's comments were racially, were about race. So, you know, and I realized that Geraldine Ferraro is not a paid person, but I thought that Samantha Powers wasn't either. So, you know, I do think that when you look at how the campaigns respond, even if they're not responsible, even if they don't have control over what is being said, how they respond has something to do or sends a message as to how they feel about what was said.
That's interesting, Rosemarie. Let's get a response from Susan.
I think Rosemarie's right. I mean, I think the better comparison, perhaps, Rosemarie, would be with Howard Wolfson, who is a paid spokesman for the Hillary Clinton campaign, compared Barack Obama to Ken Starr, which is not exactly flattering in the company we keep, and, you know, was not in any way admonished for doing so. I think the Samantha Power situation, she had a title, so they took her title away. I think the box Barack is in a little bit is that he said, I'm going to run a different kind of campaign, and I'm going to run a positive campaign, and that ups the pressure on him when these incidents happen. But I think there's no question that Hillary took a different tack. I mean, they're playing hardball on the Clinton side.
Absolutely.
Both of my friends, but I don't doubt that for a minute.
Susan Estrich was the campaign manager for Michael Dukakis' presidential run in 1988. Thank you so much for joining us, Susan.
My pleasure. Have a great day.
Thanks. Ken Rudin is NPR's political editor and writes the weekly Political Junkie column on NPR's website. His weekly podcast is called It's All Politics. You joined us in Studio 3A. Thanks, Ken.
See you, Robert.
Coming up, Stephen King, horror master, fantasy creator, and comic book fan. We're talking about the latest installment of his Dark Tower comic book series out this week. I'm Robert Smith. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.